And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 4 of Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm your host, Kelly Walker, and today we're going to answer a question from one of our listeners about feeling sensitized. And against her better judgment, Erica Latham from thebabybroad.com has agreed to join the show as a regular co-host.
I don't know how I convinced you to do this, but here I am.
I used hypnosis on her.
Taking advantage of the anxious.
So welcome back. Good to have you here.
Well, thanks.
So I'm going to jump right in here. I'm going to read the question and we'll just have a little conversation about what sensitization is, how we experience it, and how to help people that are in the thick of it right now. Sound good?
Lay it on me.
All right. So here's the question from one of our listeners. And it goes, why is everything so personal? One example is, I recently saw a post on Facebook about a friend's kid getting the flu. Then I spent the next few hours obsessing that the flu was going to pay our family a visit and ruin the weekend we had planned. How come I connect everything I hear or read back to me? So,
oh
my God. I know.
This is my whole life. This is the best question I've ever heard, ever.
I know.
And I can't wait to hear how you alone answer this.
I know. I was going to say, is this familiar, Erica? does this ring a bell?
How many times when you were coaching me did I say, somebody in three counties over has the flu, and I have it now. I must have it.
I'm dead.
I'm dead now.
I'm dead now. Yeah, and this is so common. I mean, this was my experience too when I was in the darkest days of anxiety. And the reason we feel this is because of sensitization. So for those of you out there that have read Hope and Help for Your Nerves by Dr. Claire Weeks, you probably already know what this word means, sensitization. But for those of you who are hearing this word for the first time, let's talk about it. What does it mean? How do you know if you're in it? And the fancy definition of sensitization is when our sympathetic nervous system, commonly known as the fight or flight system, is highly active and responsive, resulting in persistent and pervasive nervousness. Sensitization is the result of living in a habitual state of stress. So we talked about this a little bit in episode 2. If you haven't already listened, go back, take a listen to that episode. You can also check out a video on my website about the anxiety cycle.
My favorite video.
Yeah, it's 9 minutes. It's 9 minutes, so we won't get into it here because it'll be boring. But if you want to watch it on your own time, it's under the Living Anxiously tab of my website, panicandanxietycoach.com. So.
Yeah, watch it, write it down, put it in front of your desk. It's very helpful. Yeah.
Take notes. So what does sensitization feel like? And I have my own analogy, my own example here, but how would you describe it, Erica?
I love your, I know what your analogy is and I love it. It's my favorite one. So I wish you'd go first, but it's a never ending. It just feels like you're always keyed up. Like that's the only way I can think to describe it right now. It's just, you always feel like you're on, like your brain is on, your body's electrified kind of.
I love that one. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's that, you know, static electricity feeling, something's always happening in your body. And I think for me, it was so easy to confuse that feeling of like you could almost feel your blood running in your veins. Confusing that with something's actually wrong.
Yeah. And that's really common. It's why a lot of people in a sensitized place experience health anxiety, because it's such a physiological experience. You know, when we're in a sensitized place, we're hyper aware. So suddenly we're noticing our heartbeat, which has always been there, you know, it's nothing new, but we're, yeah. we're like, it's nothing new. It's always there. It's a good thing.
But we're you ever have, cause I think you had heart, you know, anxiety too. For me, I remember laying in my bed thinking, why can I hear my heart beating? That's not normal. And making myself laugh like, well, if I couldn't, yeah, that'd be a bigger problem.
We'd be in much, much bigger issue if I couldn't hear my heartbeat for sure. And it's funny you mentioned that. There was this really great, it was a podcast episode. I wish I could recall the show, but it was this woman who had surgery. And from the scar tissue, it like changed the acoustics of her heartbeat. So she was able to hear it. Did we talk about that a little bit?
Did we talk about, was it, are we allowed to reference other podcasts? Was it Invisibilia? Was it?
I think it might've been Invisibilia. That's.
I only listened to like 3 podcasts.
Yeah. I think it might've been Invisibilia. That sounds.
Something. I remember what you're talking about though. Yeah. And she could hear like every single tick and talk.
Yes. And it really kind of put her in that sensitized, hypervigilant, hyper-aware state. And obviously she was feeling a lot of anxiety until, it's so funny how this can happen. She got an ultrasound, like an echocardiogram of her heart. And she saw how efficient and how well it was working. And suddenly, instead of being fearful of the sensation she was noticing, she like related to it in a completely different way. It was, wow, my heart is so strong and functioning beautifully. So it just goes to show how that focus shift makes all the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your analogy for this? Because it's my favorite one. And I keep thinking about this as you're talking.
Yeah. Okay. So sensitization. This is an example I think anybody can relate to, whether or not they're in anxiety. So here in New Hampshire, we have this terrifying event around Halloween called Haunted Overload. I'm actually going 2 weeks from now,
Stop it.
I know. I'm going 2 weeks from now.
Don't you know you have anxiety? Why? Why are you doing this to
me? Because now it's fun. When you're not sensitized, it's fun, right? But no, it is so wonderfully terrifying that it's actually nationally recognized. I was so excited when I saw this thing on HGTV. Like, that's my hometown, you know. I live there. But just to get a feel for it, this event is like haunted house meets haunted woods meets Nightmare Before Christmas. You know,
that sounds awesome. Yeah.
She said sarcastically.
I said incredibly sarcastically.
Incredibly sarcastic.
Dripping with sarcasm.
So at Haunted Overload or a haunted house, whatever it might be, I know I walk around like every corner anticipating the worst. Every corner, you know, even though I know, like, I remember once during a haunted house, people saying, you know, it's not legal for anyone to like physically touch you. So you would think that would like bring some sense of relief or diminish the fear. It doesn't. I still walk around every corner. Yeah. Every corner, just anticipating my like imminent demise.
Oh my God. I cannot believe you're doing this.
Yeah. But right. This is why people do it, because they do feel that fear. They feel that excited state.
They feel
that excited state. And in that haunted house, we're obviously like hyper aware, hyper vigilant, every little noise. I know it makes me snap my head. My husband gently touching me, like to support me because I'm losing my mind, makes me jump. I spill hot cider all over him, you know, like he first degree burns, you know. Just kidding.
Good thing you're a nurse.
I know. Good thing I'm a nurse. Just kidding. We wear like way too many layers in October here. It's like freezing. That cider didn't touch him. He was fine. But being in that haunted overload, being in that haunted house, that sensitization, that's what it feels like. It's like being in a haunted house all the time.
Yeah. I love when you've talked about this to me before and have written about it. And that is exactly what it feels like. It feels like something's about to jump out at you every second. And you just don't trust that tiny twinge in your body is a tiny twinge that you wouldn't have noticed 2 days ago, you know?
Or cared about, right?
Or cared about. Or absolutely. Yeah. This is my, it's not for me now that I'm, you know, well on the path to, you know, this not being an issue to be able to, you know, talk to people that have the flu now. My best friend told me that her daughter had the stomach flu. They live in North Carolina, and she told me that her daughter had the stomach flu. I then believed I had it. in upstate New York. Like, you know, my stomach hurt. I could feel my mouth salivating. It's amazing what your brain can make up. It's amazing.
Yeah. I was that way with, since I had heart anxiety, if I heard about or saw somebody faint, that was like a fate worse than death. Fate worse than death. Like,
really?
Yeah. If I, even fainting was like what I was really scared of. And so even if, again, when you're not looking for it, you'd be surprised by how often people faint, like in comedy shows. Like, it's really
crazy.
It's routine. Yeah. You know, it's routine. And when I was sensitized, I'm like, this is horrible. Why would they put this in here? What are they
doing? Why are they doing this to me?
Yeah, why are they doing this to me? This is not funny. So anything to do with like fainting, again, because I had heart anxiety and I just assumed like my worst fear was like fainting and not waking back up. So whenever I saw that in that sensitized state, it was enough to really send me into a panic. Obviously now, like, what was I watching the other day? I think an episode of like Big Bang and someone fainted and I laughed. Never did I think that would happen naturally.
Yeah. Does it, so you laughed at that thing, do you kind of catch yourself like, oh wow, I can do this thing now that I couldn't do before?
You know, when I noticed it, when I was thinking about the episode of sensitization and when and I kind of just realized the other day, like, oh, I laughed at someone fainting. And at one point that was really enough to send me into a full blown panic attack, or hearing about somebody faint. Like, just if somebody's like, oh, I got a little lightheaded, I'm like, oh my God, I'm lightheaded. Oh, I'm doomed. You know, like that's the end. That's the end.
The people that are listening to this that are in that state of every single thing makes them, you know, think of a disease they could possibly have. They know exactly what we're talking about. And the people that don't quite read into this, they still get this. I have friends and family that don't quite understand why anytime I heard the word heart attack or heart or attack separately, I would check my pulse. You know, I could feel, you know, a chest pain. Your brain just makes this stuff up. But even then, you know, I was writing something the other day and I was trying to explain how your brain is connected to your body, you know, how we can kind of make stuff up. And the first example that came to my mind was the word yawn and how you can make somebody else yawn.
I'm literally, I'm yawning.
I know.
You can't hear me. I'm literally, so I'm like, oh.
Don't do it. And everybody on the phone, you're welcome.
My goodness.
But it's your, not that boring. I used to hate it when I would hear, I mean, Kelly, you know, how many times did you go to the doctor? Well, you're a nurse, but how many times, you know, when you're in acutely anxiety mode, how many times did you go to the doctor or urgent care or look up symptoms or whatever? And how many times did you hear it's all in your head?
Yes.
And I hated that. It felt so demeaning to me, but it kind of, it is.
It's
only in that.
That's right.
We always want a label for something, I think, is the the thing. Like, we want this tiny pain in our back to, oh, this must be something, or the pain I have in my stomach to be something. It could just be anxiety. It really just, it could be stress.
Yeah.
And that you're in that sensitized state, you know?
Yeah. Labeling makes us, as humans, we love to like kind of label and judge because it puts everything in a nice, neat box, makes us feel in control, makes us feel secure. But the tough thing, I think when people are in that super sensitized place, part of the reason they misinterpret it as something more sinister is because it is a very intense physiological experience. You're not making up that stomach ache. You're not making up.
No. No, it's real.
Right. You're not making up that 5 pounds of weight loss or that lack of appetite or trouble sleeping, you know, that's actually happening. It's just, it can be really hard to chalk it up to something as benign as stress. We just assume it must be for a more sinister, like ominous reason.
Well, we live in a WebMD culture, you know, no offense to WebMD, but we live in a place that everything needs an answer.
Right.
Everything must have an answer. And it just seems sort of almost anticlimactic to hear, you just kind of need to relax. And that's not what I'm saying, but that's sort of the answer we get. Well, just calm down.
Yeah.
It sucks to hear that. This is real. I'm really feeling this. I really felt chest pains and they were really, really scary.
Yeah.
You know, and to hear your, it was relieving to go to the best days of my life during anxiety was when I was in the cardiologist's office. I didn't have one chest pain. I didn't have one palpitation. I didn't have one twinge in any part of my body. I wanted to live there. You know, like,
can I just set up shop here, please? Yeah. What and is I rent?
God, do you need somebody to sweep the floors at night? And I think a lot of people know if you're one of those many people that suffer from panic attacks, the place you feel the best is when you actually go, you know, to the hospital, which isn't, it's not the answer always and you're fine, but it is kind of in your head in that way. You know, we read into it. We put ourselves in that place.
Right.
We read into all these symptoms and pains and twinges, and we just forget that our bodies are tougher than we think they are. And you're the queen of this, you know, it's your body wants to be better. Yeah. Your body wants to feel good.
Yeah. It takes a lot of energy to hang out in that anxious state. And of course we innocently, so very innocently, this is what the anxiety cycle is about. We so very innocently perpetuate it, you know, because we assume something is wrong. And of course, if we assume something's wrong, we're going to take action to make it go away. We're going to take action against having a heart attack and try to figure it out. It's no wonder we innocently fall for that fear, but it does send us into this like kind of feedback cycle, right?
Of, yeah.
You know, fear, react, reaffirms the fear, react, reaffirms. And each time we go round and round this cycle, it's like, here's more stress hormones. Here's more stress hormones, which of course cause that sensitized feeling. And of course, there's varying degrees of sensitization. I mean, people that aren't in an anxious place feel this too. It could be something as simple as after a night of little sleep or a stressful day at work, you find yourself super agitated during the commute home, you know, just waiting to scream at someone or unleash on someone that cuts you off.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not talking about, there are many, and you and I were a couple of these people, many people that get into a sensitized state and then have significant panic attacks.
Right.
But this is, we're talking exactly that, you know, you're stressed out, you're keyed up, and then you're mean. or you know, you're last year my sister got married and I got a stress cold, you know, like that kind of thing. Like this isn't, you know, always necessarily crippling,
right,
housebound anxiety. It also applies to that,
right?
But this is everyday everybody stuff. You know, when you're stressed out, it affects your mind, it affects your body.
Exactly. Yeah, and like I was kind of telling you before we started recording, I mean, my husband has never really struggled with anxiety or mental health in any way. But this week, like, work was just super crazy. And at the end of the day, he told me, you know, I felt pretty anxious today. I wanted to like get everything done. It felt like this big, heavy cloud. My chest was tight. And I was like, tell me more.
It must be so validating for you because he's never quite understand. So were you just hoping that he'd be a mess and cry? Like, I need you now.
Yeah, but it just speaks to, I'm like, oh, I'll make you dinner. I'll take care of you, you know.
I could coach you. And then he was completely fine because he's Andy.
Exactly. And then it was like, he was like, I know what it is. And he didn't get stuck in the cycle, right? Like he just knew that it was stress. He knew it was.
That's so annoying. I want him to get stuck just once.
I know.
Just once. Just know what it feels like, Andy.
Get stuck. Damn it, Andy.
Andy.
Explicit.
Oh, now we're an R rating on this podcast.
Now we're R rated. Sorry, guys. So, I mean, just kind of like bringing it back to the listener's question. In this sensitized state, everything feels exaggerated. Lights are too bright. Noises are too loud.
Yes.
Our thoughts are too sticky. And our emotions are no exception. Emotions are exaggerated as well. So when you have that friend that tells you their kids are sick, or you have that friend that tells you, oh, I have the stomach bug, our typical response is that of empathy. And I'm just going to geek out for a second with a fun fact. Just for a second. A study published by Israel Journal of Psychiatry and Related Sciences.
What?
I know. This is a legitimate study here. Found that people who experience anxiety tend to be more empathetic. They just have a tendency towards being more empathetic in general. So
it's great news.
Yeah. You know, flip side, silver lining. So not only are we naturally more inclined to empathy, but in a sensitized state, the empathetic response is exaggerated like everything else. So,
yeah, mm-hmm.
you know, instead of simply feeling for the person who's sick or whose kids are sick, now we're sick, right? Empathy.
Yeah.
I mean, empathy is defined as the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So
we really do.
Yeah. So obviously in the sensitized state, we're not just stepping into someone else's shoes, you know, someone else's shoes. It's like
you can do it.
Peter Piper picked.
I slid a sheet I slid.
I've never heard that one. It's a good one.
Oh, that's how I got out of panic attacks sometimes. If you say tongue twisters.
Oh yeah. I could see that. Just engaging that rational brain with a simple exercise. It's like
that's a different episode, Kelly.
That is. All right. Different episode. But going back to empathy and putting yourself into someone else's shoes, when we're in that sensitized state, suddenly there are shoes, and they're really scary shoes, you know,
they're
like
very scary shoes.
They're very, very scary shoes. So
yeah,
it's not personal. I think that's most important to remember. Like when you naturally respond that way, in that exaggerated way, it's not personal. It's just a result of being in that sensitized place. So don't beat up on yourself too bad.
And it's wild. You know, I think for me, the flu was the easiest one because I could actually catch that. You know, you can actually catch the flu.
Yeah.
And it sucks. But it just goes back to what we've talked about before and what I'm sure we'll talk about again. It's the so what if. So the worst part about anxiety for me was and is when I get caught up in it is just that, getting caught up. So you know, my neighbor has the flu or my coworker has the flu and it's like, oh, I'm gonna get it now. I just know I'm gonna get it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna be so sick and I'm gonna throw up and I'm gonna have the chills and it, okay. So, you know, or it could be even more serious, you know, somebody said that they had a heart attack. Am I gonna have a heart attack? Somebody at work actually had a heart attack and I for hours and hours, I like it was contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, you like know, monitoring your body, like were you monitoring your body a little bit, like checking your pulse and.
Yeah. Well, he was youngish and healthy. And does that mean I'm going to have a heart attack? No, it doesn't. Yeah, you know, we're different lives, different people. And I'm taking care of myself and we're going to, I'm sure, talk about this, but that's take care of yourself the best you can, do the best you can. And, you know, if something happens, you'll be able to deal with it. That's the other than being empathetic, the second best thing about anxiety is you know how to deal with stuff that happens.
Right.
You know exactly what to do. You're overprepared. You're ready to go.
Yeah. When it happens in real life, we're good to go. And when we spend time in what if land, it leaves us with this like feeling of powerlessness. But of course, like who can, if you're not having a heart attack right now, there is nothing to do. No one can what if that to death in the moment, you know, there's nothing to be gained from it, you know, and it just makes us of course feel afraid because that's a scary story for anybody. You know, if anybody,
there's no preparation for any kind of emergency really, you know, you can kind of know what to do, but when it comes down to it, you'll find the resources. It'll be fine. It's, really, you know,
it's why we have this fight or flight response for those moments, right? So that we don't even have
to
think. It's reactionary.
Yeah. I know.
So
what do we do then? Like what?
Yeah.
So you're like totally keyed up. Everything feels electrified. You hate everybody. There's nothing worse than when I'm anxious. Don't even come near me because I'm mean and you know, a mess. So what do you do?
Don't want to put on real pants, leave the house,
don't want to put
you know,
on pants. Like, I'm in yoga pants right now. Yeah. Crazy.
Exactly. So I think first and foremost, it's keeping in mind that anxiety is self-limiting. Your body can only produce and release so many stress hormones at a time. You'll get a break from the sensitization. No one has ever been sensitized 24/7 for their entire life. So, I mean,
I didn't believe you when you would tell me that when I was coaching with you, and I didn't believe you until I just was too exhausted to give a crap.
Exactly.
And it's true. Your body, you fall asleep, you yawn, you watch a show, like something else will distract you enough to give you just a tiny bit of clarity. It's true. It's totally true.
And I remember part of you seeing this, I asked, you know, like, do you ever notice how after those really keyed up anxious days, like a stress hangover day where you're just exhausted, fatigued, and you're like, oh yeah, that day does come.
Yeah, you're actually more tired. Well, and then if you get caught up in that, well, why am I so tired?
Yeah. You know?
And that's it doesn't mean this can't happen a few days in a row or even a few hours in a row. It just means it's impossible for your body to live in this state forever. It just is. And you don't have to believe us. You'll see it eventually.
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, don't trust us blindly. Look at your own experience. Like, even if it's for 5 minutes watching a YouTube video, like, are there moments where...
Or 9 minutes where you watch Kelly's YouTube video.
Exactly.
Conveniently located on her website.
I love it. 9 minutes of pure bliss.
9 minutes. Heaven.
Of heaven, pure bliss. But exactly, like, there are moments where we just forget that we're a person struggling with anxiety. And of course, our brain has a negative bias. So I know for me, I was like, no, I am anxious all the time. And if you try to tell me otherwise, I felt defensive, you know, like when someone would try to tell me, but no, look, you do have moments of freedom. I'm like, you don't get it. I'm always anxious. And then, you know, really defensive, really frustrated.
Belligerent.
Yeah. Belligerent. Yes.
Yeah.
Indignant. Uh-huh. Indignant. And then, of course, had some time to, like, the power of pause, chill out. And I would notice, I'm like, oh, I totally watched that entire episode of Big Bang or How I Met Your Mother or whatever without feeling nervous. I guess there are those moments. Fine. I'll concede here. I'll admit it.
There is some stubbornness with the anxious, I must say.
It's hard to let go of it sometimes.
Well, it's the way our brains are constructed.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk about the happiness trap and all that stuff, but we're just in a... We're in a place, like this period of time, where we're supposed to be blissfully happy. And if there's anything outside of that, that means that we're depressed or anxious or something's wrong. Right. And the same thing goes with our bodies. I think we should connect the two. You know, if you don't feel completely calm and completely 100% healthy and rested all the time, obviously you have cancer. Like, you know,
I know.
And it's funny. It's funny to the two of us because we've been through this, but I remember listening to you talk about this and being kind of pissed. Like, don't, you know, you don't know. We do know.
Yeah.
We know. The two of us, girl, people listening, we know.
Yeah.
And it's, you'll get through this and you will laugh at this someday about, you know, having that. I had, this might be too much. I had a UTI a couple weeks ago. And I, after that, I had worked out for the first time in 4 months and my back hurt. And I connected the two that, well, obviously my UTI has gone to my back and I have back cancer. And I, like, got wrapped up in it for like half a day. Me, like, I'm out of this acutely anxious cycle typically.
Right.
And even I talked to you the next day, like, well, I have back cancer today, so I can't really, I'm not going to be able to talk to you today. I have to really sit here and wallow in sorrow because I'm busy picking out flowers. And it's sort of funny, you know, but I don't get wrapped up in it that long anymore or that often, but it's your brain wants to go there because it thinks it's protecting you.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there's nothing really wrong with your mind or body. It's just, your brain thinks it's doing the right thing by making you worry, and your body then is worried that your brain is worried. So then it hurts more. It is a cycle. It's a cycle all every way you slice it.
Yeah.
So
it is. And it's a natural feedback loop, you know, like when your body has expended all the energy reserves it has, it's going to take a rest. It's going to take a rest. And even though it's really counterintuitive, again, if we're experiencing anxiety, it is habitual for us to worry and to ruminate. And that's why we're kind of stuck in it in the first place. So it's counterintuitive, but the more space you make for this uncomfortable, sensitized experience without trying to fight or force your way back to calm, the quicker you will find yourself feeling quote unquote normal, you know, back to baseline.
Yeah, it's true.
Remembering it's not dangerous, right? Like a body on sensitization is just a body that has gotten into the habit of hanging out in a stress state. You know, your body's not experiencing anything it can't handle.
No, it really, your body, I said it before, but we're way tougher than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah.
Like, way tougher. And I don't know. I still can't believe you're going to that haunted house, but that's why we can do that, because we can deal with a little bit of stress. It is true that living in stress chronically can make you sick. That is, it's true, it's real, look it up, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but understanding that you can get out of that cycle is huge news.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, we have a say, there is some choice there, and it's about kind of making that space so that we feel like we have a choice. Because right now it feels pretty automatic. You know, being in that anxious place feels habitual, automatic, but the wonderful world of neuroplasticity, our brain is really,
I love neuroplasticity.
Yeah, it is just, it is wired to learn and adapt to new habits and new ways of doing things. So in the meantime, though, this doesn't mean that you just have to sit and bathe in your sensitized state, right? It's not like watching, what is that saying? Watching the tea kettle?
What?
Washed pot doesn't boil? Is that the... What's the saying? Do you know? What's that saying?
A watched pot doesn't boil.
Or never boils. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm trying to get at here. You don't have to just
don't
like
edit
sit
this out, by the way. That was the best thing I've ever heard. A boiled pot doesn't wash itself.
I'm terrible with idioms. Like that part of my brain
is. Oh, God.
Just,
I have a friend that can't do a saying to save her life. This
I can't
fabulous.
Do it. I can't do it. I don't know why I try. I'm hoping I'll get better at it. So
never. This is really funny. All right. So you're right.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is you don't have to like sit there and stare at the anxiety and do nothing, you know,
you can,
and you can exactly,
yeah.
You can, you don't have to do anything to force your way back to calm, but there are things you can do to take care of yourself. Like,
and
I think it's most important to remember, like, to go about these self-care habits gently, not with force, like you and I were talking about, Erica. Like, we both started meditation, like, I gotta meditate to calm down. Why isn't this working? Like, of
why
course.
Isn't it working? I remember that day where I was in my car, I was talking to you, we were doing a coaching session, and I was so angry, like, you keep telling me to do mindfulness and it's not working. And I would white knuckle my way through meditation. And I remember you so gently sighing and saying, are you doing it to calm down? I was like, yeah, of course. Well, it's not going to work. You can't, you know, but there are things you can do to sort of slow down your nervous system.
Right. Exactly. Like, you're not completely powerless here, especially if you go about it with the right motive, like not trying to get rid of the anxiety, escape it, dampen it, but just finding ways to make it a little more comfortable in the meantime. That's what I call it. In the meantime, I can do this, this, or that to support my body. So I don't know about you. Are there certain self-care habits that were particularly helpful for you?
For me, I found once I understood this, the vagus nerve was a huge thing for me to understand.
Sure.
So I thought that was hippy dippy and hooey. It's like chakras, which I'm sure are very real. I just don't like, if I can't see it, it doesn't exist. So, understanding that the vagus nerve is a real thing and it goes through your body, and that it kind of sends messages to and from your brain, from parts of your body. So when there's a part of your body that feels tight or anxious or knotted or whatever, it's telling your brain something's wrong. So to sort of slow the message transition between the brain and the body, singing was huge in my car by myself.
Yep.
Or humming. Like any stimulation. I think you actually told me that holding water in your mouth, is that right? Or splashing with water.
Splashing with cold water. Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Singing in my car, Alison Krauss, I don't know why, just something gentle, something, you know, that didn't artificially stimulate my nervous system, like going to, I don't know, a haunted house.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
I'm doing it on purpose.
You're absolutely. That's you need to take like all the selfies and be like, I'm cured of anxiety. There is no cure. Yeah. Now I do mindfulness meditation in the morning, not because I'm weird and not because, you know, I'm like Richard Gere. It just works for me. You know, I can get myself into a nice, relaxed state before my day even begins.
Right.
So that's helpful.
Yeah.
And grounding. There's all kinds of, grounding and neuroplasticity and all the stuff.
All the geek stuff. Yeah.
But it just understanding the vagus nerve and calming that down has been helpful.
Sure. Yeah. And for those out there, the vagus nerve is just, it's a part of your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the opposite of fight or flight. It's our relaxation response. So we have this natural relaxation response that we can stimulate. Like Erica said, one way is using your vocal cords, humming, singing. I used to read aloud. That really helped me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I used to read aloud, like if I was really in that place, like my breathing was off and I was feeling edgy and not, I would just say, oh, I'm going to read this chapter aloud. Again, not desperately trying to get away from the anxiety, but just trying to go about my business with
just
it there.
Just give yourself space.
Space.
You just need just like a tiny, like an inch of space to let a little daylight in.
Just a little bit of space.
Just to be able to see it for what it is, you know, and that's your saying. I just absolutely stole your saying, but that it's true. Like you just need to be able to see things a little clearer.
Yeah. I didn't make it up. Like that clear. Is, you know, like I didn't make it up. It's, that's exactly.
Trademark Kelly Walker.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's basically what mindfulness is buying us that space so that we can respond instead of like blindly react, which is how anxiety becomes habitual. So, I mean.
And it's practiced. Just like the habit of becoming anxious was unintentional, innocent practice, getting yourself to relax and just have that little bit of space is, it takes practice too. So if you go home, you know, if you're done listening to this and you have a stressful day and you go home and you try to sing to Alison Krauss and it doesn't quite get you to bliss, you know, don't panic and don't call us full of crap. I mean, there's a million things. I love the, you're not a deep breather. I know you're not a deep breather. You think
I'm not a deep breather. Yeah, I'm not
and
a deep breather.
I don't think I am either. And it's kind of offensive when people just tell me, well, take some deep breaths. And you take some deep breaths. I'll tell you where to take your deep breaths. But,
but it really works for some people. Some people
it does
are like,
work for some people. And it works for the Navy SEALs. Yes. If the Navy SEALs do this, I'm a huge fan. If you breathe, and I'm going to get this count wrong and it doesn't quite matter, but if you breathe, you have to breathe in for a less amount of time than you breathe out.
Yes, exactly.
It's sometimes if you hyperventilate, what is it? It's you have too much oxygen and not enough carbon dioxide.
Exactly. Right? So yeah. So if you, and that's why breathing into a brown paper bag can help too, because believe it or not, we're supposed to have some carbon dioxide level, you know, some carbon dioxide in our blood. And when we're hyperventilating, the oxygen's a bit too high and the carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Is a bit
and you get lightheaded.
And you get lightheaded. Yeah.
You feel like you're going to pass out and,
but really, you're not going to. Yeah. I mean, it feels like you're going to pass out. But
rarely do you pass out.
Yeah.
I didn't know this until you told me this, because passing out wasn't my thing, but I remember you saying it, that it's so rare to actually pass out.
Yeah. Especially from hyperventilation. It's really, really difficult. A healthy individual won't do it.
Isn't it a whole thing? Like you're, when you're freaking out, your blood pressure is actually really high, and to pass out,
it needs to be really low.
Yeah,
well, exactly.
You learn something new from Kelly Walker every day.
Knowledge is power, as cliche
as
it is.
So the Navy SEAL breath is something like you breathe in for 4, you hold it for 6, and you release it for 8. That kind of a thing.
It's something like that, and that's what I believe.
Somewhere in that range. Yeah.
I'm trying to. I should know this because I have a video on my website. It's like, I think it's called 4-7-8 breathing, which is inhaling for 4, holding for 7.
Whatever it is, you know, don't hold your breath until you actually pass out. But it's something where you breathe in a little bit, kind of slowly, you hold it for a few more seconds, and then you release it for even more seconds. And truly, when I'm at an absolute 10, doing a couple of those can, if I'm in the right headspace, you can feel just that tiny bit of space, just a little bit of room to say, is this really that important? Do I really need to be freaking out about this?
Right, Like it gives us just a little space to see, this is panic, or I think this is anxiety. Right. I think I know what
this
is.
Or I think it's my boss being a jerk, or I think it's the chainsaw guy at the haunted house, or, it's just to get out of your brain wants to protect you. It wants to freak out. That's its job, that little lizard part of your brain. And getting out of that just enough to have the frontal lobe, the newer part of your brain, kick in and say, oh, you're okay.
Yeah, exactly. And again, there's a million, everybody's different. There's a million ways to kind of access this relaxation response. And some getting rest, you know, like sometimes we don't make like sleep a priority. When we're in that state, it may just be about making hitting the pillow instead of hitting the bar for a little while priority, you know, gentle movement. Like if you're in a super sensitized place, like you don't have to do high interval, crazy workout training for benefits. Like go for a walk.
What is that thing? Like a 20-minute walk a couple times a week can change your brain.
Yep, exactly.
Maybe I'll walk someday. I don't know.
And your heart health, you know, that's enough by the, you know, the American Heart Association. It's something like low to moderate activity, 20 minutes, half hour, 3 to 4 times a week. It doesn't take much to like support your body. And gentle exercise really does help metabolize and burn off those stress hormones that are causing us, you know, the bane of our existence.
Oh, it's a whole thing that I'm sure you're more nerdy about than I am, but releasing endorphins sort of trumps the stress hormones or some hooey.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's an exercise. It is. Yeah. Exercise releases those endorphins. And if you need a break from stimulants like sugar, coffee, take it. Doesn't mean you'll never have coffee again, but just supporting your body. This is temporary. Whatever you're doing in this moment doesn't mean this is how life is always going to look. It doesn't mean you're always going to need to like treat yourself in this. Sometimes it feels like we're treating ourselves like glass almost. So I would say, you know, it doesn't always look like that. It's just for now while you're in this sensitized place, being kind to your body. Nobody's going to do it for you. And we just have to look out for ourselves.
Amen.
Yep. So that's pretty much our episode on sensitization. Anything else you wanted to add?
I think you're absolutely insane for going to a haunted house.
Watch, I'll get so scared I'll run and like break my leg or something, and next episode I'll be in a cast, you know. I'm not saying I don't get scared. I do. Like, I get really scared.
I don't get it. But you do, girl.
Cool. So that's our episode. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, take a minute to write a review on iTunes so that we can reach and support more people. If you're looking for more resources like coaching or courses, or have a question you'd like answered on the show, visit notanotheranxietyshow.com. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.